This meeting is being recorded.
Plan Markets, Midi, how's your trades going?
My trades were going good.
Trades going good?
I just buy Bitcoin.
Okay. That's the trade that we're all on. That is a trade. Marcus?
Yes.
Are you there?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm here. It's morning here in Medellin. And maybe you can hear it in my voice, but just woke up ready to do this one. Looking forward to it.
Just woke up. It's lunchtime where I am. It's also lunchtime for Midi because she's an early riser.
Exactly.
Just like our buddy
Pedro. Yeah, it's lunchtime.
Yeah.
I woke up at 4 a.m. That's what I do.
What's for lunch? What's on the menu for lunch today? Cuban sandwich?
In the menu?
Yeah.
No, I'm about, you know, after we're done with this, I'm going to go make myself. Actually, I already have half a pound of ground beef already made from yesterday.
Okay.
And I just throw, and then I throw 3 or 4 eggs on there. You know, I'm making grass-fed butter. And then I'm good till like about 2 p.m.
I thought you were a vegan.
Huh? What? No. Oh, no. No way. No way.
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah. I don't know. I hear meat's not healthy for you. I don't know. I hear eggs can cause sudden death. So.
I heard that eggs cause clots. Wasn't that the last thing?
Yeah. That's the new.
Yeah. No. You know, that's clown world, right?
I've been eating 6 eggs a day for the last like 7 months straight. So that's what I eat for breakfast normally. 6 eggs.
Meat? Prices really high and they need to get the prices back down?
Yeah, that's the psyop. I don't know. No, I eat a lot of meat, but I
you're
eat
not that expensive.
Hey, well, depending on where you are.
Will alert. Yeah, I guess. Will alert, Sean.
Oh,
will.
Yes. Midi's been into Bitcoin for years now, apparently, because eggs on a SAT standard, eggs are cheap if you go back to 2015. Okay, well,
exactly.
Let us start out. First of all, welcome everybody into Bitcoiner's Guide. This is the show that we wish we would have had when we first started learning about Bitcoin. So we made it for you and only you, because we only have one listener. No, just joking. We have millions of listeners, millions of fans across the globe. They just don't know it yet. And just a timestamp and price stamp. Today is Saturday, January 28th, 2:07 p.m. in Madrid, because that's where I am. And the current price of Bitcoin is, let me look it up real quick, $22,900 and some change. It says it's up like 9% in the last, I don't know if that's right. Whatever. It's doing its thing over the last 24 hours. Who knows how much it's up or down.
I'll tell you this though, Sean, whoever's been really watching, you know, who cares about the last 24 hours? You know, our shows are about like a week or 2 weeks apart these last few times.
Yeah.
And for the listener that's been paying attention, you know, last time we said, you know, the bottom is in. So just listen to Big Sean and listen to Marcus for the real
Marcus. Listen to Marcus about the price. Don't listen to me about the price. I have no idea what the price is going to do. But you're right. No. The last 24 hours do not matter. What matters is overall trajectory. So Midi, we are glad to have you here today. Special guest of ours. You know, you've been on Twitter recently. Right before we started recording, Midi was going to go into some deep monologue about why she got onto Twitter. And now that we're recording, we must hear it because I stopped her from telling us. So what is the reason why, Midi? Why did you join Twitter?
So the reason I joined Twitter is because I found the Bitcoin community on Twitter and I'm just so passionate about it. You know, I started just digging in. I just went down the rabbit hole after I got scammed. So I just went down deep. And I found my people in Twitter and I was like, oh my gosh, these are my people.
Did you fall for that Nigerian prince letter as well? Is that where you got scammed? I mean,
no, actually, happened to me
because I got scammed.
Yeah, what happened and when did it start?
Well, I got a friend of mine told me about this Spanish company that was offering like returns on your money, on your investment. And the way they did it was you had to set up an account at Coinbase and then buy the Bitcoin and send it to them.
Cool.
And then what they did, what they did, no, listen. No, what they did was they were taking advantage like of the price difference in the exchanges. So they were
arbitrage,
taking profits off of the spread, from the exchanges. Mm. And they were sharing the profits with the investors, which was us. But then what happened is when the price of Bitcoin shot up, they pretty much kept all the Bitcoin that we had sent in and gave us back our investment.
They did.
The people that could take it out, they did. Yeah, they did. But they kept all the earnings that we had had. I had like thousands of dollars in earnings, and they kept it all.
Wait, no. So they just gave you back like the fiat price you bought in it.
Yeah, yeah. So it wasn't like too bad because I actually was withdrawing money, and I actually withdrew more than I had invested. But I have some family members that I told them, and they didn't get a chance to take their money out. So
this was a company.
That's why I can't orange peel them.
So the Spanish speaking country, or a company based out of Spain.
It was based out of Spain. It was, I don't know if you guys ever heard of the Pelayos.
Pelayos.
No.
This is a family that bankrupted, I think, the casinos in Vegas. They had some algorithm, I don't know, he was like a math genius or something. I don't think they're allowed back in the casinos in Vegas. There's a movie.
They're known scammers.
So was this your first contact with Bitcoin or crypto? And was this during the bull run in 2020 or 2021?
This was in March of 2020.
Okay, so right after, right when COVID started.
Exactly. Yep.
And that was the first time you bought, and that was the first time you bought Bitcoin.
That was the first time I bought Bitcoin. I didn't even know what it was. I didn't know what I was buying when I was sending it over to them. You know, I had someone help me.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got in at like the perfect time, but in the wrong way, I guess. I mean, you missed out on some. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, but you know what? Like, they kind of actually did me a favor because I'm a very curious person. So after they dumped us, pretty much, I was like, why do these people, what's so good about this Bitcoin? And I just became curious and I just started digging. And then I was like, oh my God, like,
where did you start digging that made you be like, oh, okay, this actually might be something real? Like, where did you start digging into?
I came to Twitter, and then
right after the rug pull.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you know how to come to Twitter?
Yeah, like how did you even know that?
I don't know. I got curious and I was like, oh, let me just look into this. I honestly don't know how I got into it.
You don't remember.
I don't remember exactly, but I'm glad I did.
And how did you find the guys? How did you figure out how to I mean, you said somebody was like offering returns. Did they approach you, or did you see it on YouTube? Or
no. I have a friend that's in the ATM business, and okay. I guess what do you call that? His compadre,
his partner, or something is.
Yeah, his partner. Like he has a really close friend that told him about this business. That this guy had quit his job and everything.
Yeah,
and it was all into that business, and he got a whole bunch of people in it too.
Did he get scammed as well?
I'm sure he did, because he thought it was legit.
At that point, you don't know if that person is he's getting scammed or is he part of the scam. Even if he comes back and I got rug pulled too, we have no idea, honestly.
Exactly. So yeah. But yeah, like I did that for like from March till November. Like in November, I tried to like take out my returns and I wasn't able to. And then they came back and said, oh, we're just going to give you back your initial investment. And then that's it.
Mm.
So
That was still actually not too, like, it went from what, 4,000 to probably 20,000 in November.
By November, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, maybe 16 somewhere. It went up really fast in like December, I believe.
Yeah, it went all the way up to 20. I think it finished the year off like 28,000 to 2020.
I'm imagining like they're giving back your initial investment to be like, oh, well, then people are probably not going to go to like courts or, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's probably intentional.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're all the way in Spain. What are we going to do? You know, there's nothing we could do. But it's okay because of them, I discovered Bitcoin.
So what made you not? Because when that happens to some people, they go, everything that the news said was right. Bitcoin's a scam. It's a way to get hacked out of your money, you know, because a lot of people could think that after that happens to them. What made you go, maybe there's still something to this and I just went about it the wrong way? Like, what made you think that?
Well, my family members that I got into that, that's how they think. But I guess I just think differently. Like I said, I'm a very curious person. So I just started digging in and you know, when you start digging in, then you start learning about how money works and you go back, like way back, you know, mm-hmm. Federal Reserve, you know, you go back, you know, 1971. So you like, you just go back and you're like, oh my God, like we've been screwed like for decades. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, maybe, and I'm sorry for all the questions, but this is such a story to me.
Ask away.
It was such a bad story, but
he's getting
like, what about now? I mean, like, to me, you know, everything that also happened with FTX, the blow up last year, the end of last year, you know, a lot of people, and before that we had Celsius, and a lot of people lost money in lending platforms like BlockFi. So to me, the good thing out of this was that a lot of people learned, you know, the importance of self-custody, you know, because the older Bitcoiners were always still talking about Mt. Gox, and even, you know, not even talking about Mt. Gox that often anymore, because it seemed like such a long time ago and it was probably not going to happen anymore. Now we've got these regulated big, you know, exchanges like FTX that are, you know, like sponsoring Formula One and naming sports stadium and that kind of stuff. And then Sam Bankman-Fried rug pulled so many people, and the guys at like BlockFi and what was the other one again? Anyway, you know, Celsius. So much people lost money. So a lot of people learned like the importance of, you know, not just tweeting it out, not your keys, not your coin. And we're seeing it now because there's this graph that's circulating all the time that shows how many Bitcoin is held on exchanges. And that's been growing and growing since the inception of Bitcoin and the inception of exchanges all the way up until like the last halving. But since like the last halving, that number has been declining. And then since the mid of half year of last year, you know, you really see an increase of people like really pulling their coins off exchanges. So I'm just wondering, in your case, you know, like, did you figure out how to self-custody? I mean, you know, I remember when I came in, you, it's usually something that goes gradually, right? First, you just buy some Bitcoin on exchange and you're reading up about it, doing, and then only when you get a little bit further, you maybe start thinking about buying a hardware wallet, and actually holding it in self-custody and maybe running a node. Anyway, I'm just curious, how has that been for you? And has it been difficult? Yes.
Yeah. Well, when I got into Twitter, then I went to another platform that I'd rather not mention because I'm not on there. I actually erased the app. And I learned a lot there.
But, huh? Never mind, this bad joke.
Anyway, so I learned a lot at that platform, but you know, the people that were doing it were not. They didn't have the best interests on the plat. So I went back to Twitter and I stayed on Twitter, and that's when Tommy and Andrew.
What app are you talking about right now?
Is it like
I don't want to send people there. I don't want to send people there.
It's OnlyFans confirmed. Confirmed. Mitty went to OnlyFans to learn about Bitcoin.
No.
I don't know what app you, Reddit? Are you talking about Reddit? That one.
Like, nope. I am not saying.
I don't even know what that app there is. Noster wasn't even around back then.
Sean. Nah. Like, we literally said, if there's something you don't want to say,
I know.
You don't have to say it. And here you are, like, digging in, like, say it.
Whatever you want.
I'm not saying. I am not going to send innocent plebs there.
Okay.
No.
that's totally fine. Okay, but anyway, so you got on an app or a platform or an exchange or whatever where you can buy Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Where I buy my Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Is that what you were asking?
Yeah, I think you were explaining whether you self custody or not. You know, like, and you know, was it hard for you and like.
No, because like I said, like on that app that I was learning and just spending a lot of time in, just listening, you know, just learning, people talk, and a lot of people would just go up and ask questions, and I would just listen. I never really ask any questions. I just listen because I would listen while I was at the gym working out or while I was at work. I could just listen. So I learned how to self-custody, you know. I bought my hardware wallet and I learned how to self-custody. The first time I transferred my Bitcoin from the exchange there, it was nerve-wracking. Like, I was scared.
Yeah.
but it was successful, and now it's easy.
You know? I remember transferring.
I wait till my Bitcoin clears, and it's out of there.
I remember the first time that I transferred my Bitcoin to a hardware wallet, and I had no one that taught me. I literally went to a YouTube tutorial and I had $20,000. It was like everything that I had saved up, and I was all in Bitcoin, and I was like, I gotta get this off. Because at that time I was buying on Coinbase, you know, and I was like, I gotta get this off the exchange. And I transferred it, and you know, like, it doesn't show up right away, and my heart dropped, and I was
we kind of make this thing for like new people already or as well, but sometimes I think it's only like the Bitcoin plebs that have been around for a long time what you can show. But anyway, a tip I always give people, you know, when you're going to send Bitcoin for the first time, I mean, do it, but always just start with like a super small transaction first, you know. I mean, just send like $5, $10, so you get comfortable, you know what you're doing, you kind of know what the process is going to be, because the first time you're doing it, like, Bitcoin is so different from anything else you've ever used before. You know, you're trying to figure out, I remember searching like, what is a wallet, or where can I, you know, find a website for a wallet? You know, you don't even know, is a wallet a website or an app, or, you know, how does this stuff work? What is this private key? Is it like a password? What's 24 words? So it's such a weird new concept. And then, yeah, and I guess there are a lot of scammers out there, right? So if you're not careful, you might think you found a wallet, and you're actually just sending Bitcoin to somebody else who's then, you know, walking away with your Bitcoin.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why when I went to the 2022 Bitcoin conference last year.
Okay.
I was actually part of the Swan Force. They had us in a Air Force suits.
Really?
We were like helping. I was there basically helping promote the app, their new app that they were coming out with.
Oh yeah, I think I've ever seen. Did we meet there?
I think I met you that first night at that bar that like where Pubby and Andrews were. The bar.
Oh yeah, yes.
I think we met briefly, but like I didn't really know you.
Yeah, there was like a club party going on. Yeah.
Yeah, night before.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you guys actually met. I've never even met Sean in real life.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
How long have you known each other?
A couple years now.
Probably longer than 2 years now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's 2023. We definitely met in before 2020.
It was like 2020. Yeah, like summer 2020.
Yeah.
Somewhere around that time.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, it's time to meet, guys. Are you going to wait till the halving party?
Probably.
Probably will be the halving party.
Yeah, you know, we're Bitcoiners. I'm cheap on my sets, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to waste it on it.
Sean. No, I'm joking. Sean actually flew down. He met some of the other meme factory members. I remember, and it was RD who came down to you, right, Sean?
Yeah, RD came. He visited me when I was in Tenerife. I need to visit Yellow out in Greece, but there's a couple other guys. I met Labra when I went down. He came to El Salvador when I was there. That was cool. And
Mark, the conference, you got Greg and Chairforce.
So Becca and Rusty and Pedro. Maybe I'll never meet Pedro. I hope I meet him.
Well, they should be going to the halving party, right?
The halving party. That's where everyone's going to be, because it's the best place to be during the halving. Mm-hmm. Okay, so coming back to you, Mitty. Mm-hmm. So, like, where's your background come from, right? I guess I would say, like, if you feel comfortable saying, are you from the U.S.? You live there now? Like, what's your story?
So I was born in the Dominican Republic, and I came to the States when I was 9 years old. I actually grew up in New Jersey.
Okay.
Cause I'm an island boy, trying to make it. We actually grew up really close then, because I grew up on St. Martin, which is just a couple of miles away from the Dominican Republic.
Oh, really?
But no, we don't speak like that, Marcus. No, we don't speak like that.
I don't know.
No,
Dominicans speak
Spanish
very differently.
Yeah, que lo que.
Que lo que.
Okay.
Yeah.
We had a lot of Dominicans in on St. Martin. Yeah, I grew up with a girl who was in my class. She was from the Dominican Republic as well. So I know you guys speak Spanish. I know.
Yes. Spanish.
All right. So you moved at 8 or 9. That's pretty young. So.
Mm-hmm. And then, so I grew up in Jersey, and then.
And you had to learn English.
And
you had to learn a whole new language.
I had to learn English. I was in the bilingual program at school, learning English. And when I got to high school, that's when I pretty much, they were like, okay, you're good to go. You can be in all English classes.
Yeah. So, at that point.
It took a few years. Yeah. But I was in the choir when I was in sixth grade. And I was singing songs in English, but I had no idea what I was singing. But the music teacher wanted me to join the choir. She liked my voice.
Yeah, that's good.
I did that.
So then you moved to Jersey, and here's the thing about Marcus and me. We always, there's something that we kind of like to dissect a little bit and be like, what do you think made you open to receiving Bitcoin throughout your life? Like, have you ever taken a step back and thought, okay, this thing happened to you. You got rug pulled by this company in Spain. All your family members are like, okay, we're done with Bitcoin. But then for some reason, you're like, I'm still curious. I'm going to keep going. Are there certain things you think that about your personality, or certain things that have happened to you in your life that made you that curious to want to know? Or, what do you think has kind of brought you down the rabbit hole?
Yeah, so I was married for almost 20 years, and I got divorced, and I had to pretty much start all over. Yeah. So as a single mom, 2 kids, I had to start all over. I had no savings at all. Mm-hmm. So I had to pretty much start all over and see, okay. Because I was married to someone that was a consumer, and I don't think I have a consumer mentality. I've always been interested in finances and making money and maybe having my own business one day. But he was a spender. He spent every single dime in that bank account. And I was like, it was frustrating.
Wow. So, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
Hey, and are you, because we've got this team as well, right? Like, it seems that a lot of people are like engineers or have finance background and stuff. Like, is that, does that apply to you too, or are you just curious?
How come
you understand Bitcoin? Because it seems like normies, you know.
Because she speaks two languages, Marcus. That's something else. Like money.
Oh, yeah, that's language. Something that you care about.
Money
yeah.
is a language.
And I also majored in psychology, so I understand people a little bit. My major in college was psychology, and I minored in sociology and Spanish. So
good.
I don't know. When I went to school, I didn't know why I chose psychology as a major, but it seems like it's helped me with life, trying to understand people, you know?
Right. So Are you then thinking about, for instance, how Satoshi hacked into, you know, like kind of like the human psyche, you know? I mean, he basically hacked us by number go up, right? He understood the importance of, you know, people are just driven by, you know, the gains, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about that, or is that not how you look at it?
I just, like I said, I just, when I got divorced, I would get depressed, and I would be like, I have a good job, you know, but not gonna get me where I want to be. Like, I want to be able to travel. I want to be able to do things. And with my regular job, that's not gonna cut it, you know? And I have my kids, yeah. And, you know, I want to leave something for them. You know, I want them to just leave something for them, you know, not just, I don't want to just live day by day, you know? I'm like, there has to be something. There has to be something out there. And I discovered Bitcoin, and it was like the heavens opened for me. I kid you not. Like, I was like, wow.
What is it? Like, what is it exactly about Bitcoin that made you go, wow? Like, why, you know, the way I see it is, you know, everyone sees Bitcoin from their own perspective. And maybe it was just that you're starting over, or, you know, what was it that like really caught your attention?
Well, the fact that I was starting over, and the fact that I've just studied it, you know, and I know that we're so early. Like, we are so early. And I'm like, someday I'm going to be able to do what I want to do. I want to be able to travel and just leave something behind for my kids and, you know, teach them as well. You know, I have a 16-year-old that I was asking the other day, because I went to the Bitcoin Day conference last weekend. Yeah. And he was asking me, you know, he's like, Mom, how was the conference? And I'm like, I met a lot of cool people, you know? And he said, well, I want to hear all about it. So oh, I still really? Have that conversation pending with him. Yes.
Okay.
He wants to know.
We got to get him a Twitter account, have him hop on Bitcoin Twitter.
Yeah, we'll see. But he's showing interest. He's showing interest, so that's good. I also have a 22-year-old, but he's not there yet.
So when you started studying Bitcoin, and you were saying like, hey, I have this job that I have, did you end up, you know, like, one thing that Marcus and I sometimes talk about, and is, you know, we don't talk about it a lot, but from time to time we do, is it's not only important to save in Bitcoin, but it's also important to up your cash flows. Did you stay in the same job and just say, look, I'm going to switch everything to Bitcoin standard? Or did that make you work harder? Did you try to get a promotion? Did you, you know, invest in yourself, get new skills so you could up your cash flow? What did you end up doing to, like, or was it just, yes, hey, I'm going to switch everything to Bitcoin?
Yeah, well, I've been with the same company for almost 7 years. It's okay. It's actually a boat manufacturer, or mm-hmm. like a high-end towboat manufacturer. And I started there in the front desk and in the HR reception.
Okay.
And so I wasn't making, you know, it was just a receptionist job, but I learned a lot in HR, and you know, I got pay raises, and then I transferred to another department where I'm at now, and that's I'm doing a lot better. But when I wasn't, when I was a receptionist, that's when I decided to get divorced too. So even though I wasn't making a lot of money, I was done. And I said, I don't care if I have to go panhandle, but I'm not staying in this relationship. So I told my ex, I'm like, we're done. I can't do this anymore. It was hard.
Yeah.
But sometimes you got to do that. You know, a lot of people stay in relationships because of the kids and stuff. You know, I think you do more harm to kids when you stay in a toxic relationship than if you leave it. So those people that are in like relationships that they know they should not be in, don't do it for the kids, because it's not good for them. And my oldest one, I could tell that he, you know, it impacted him, like, you know, the relationship I had with his dad. So
yeah, I mean, those are never easy decisions, right? Should you stay or go, right? And everyone's situation is different. Those are always hard things to navigate.
Yeah. I'll share something too if you guys want. So after I decided to get divorced, this is more serious, but after I decided to get divorced and I, 5 months into that, my youngest was diagnosed with a brain tumor. So, you know, that was hard too. Wow. So I was going through a divorce. And then I was going through, you know, they told us there was nothing they could do because it wasn't an operable brain tumor. It's called DIPG. It's in the pons, and, you know, there's nothing they could do. They told us pretty much that he had like about 9 months. He was 7 at the time. So pretty much he has 9 months to live and he died exactly 9 months after.
Wow.
So that was hard.
Yeah.
That was really hard.
Yeah. Super. Yeah. Like you've mentioned it before to me, so I knew this, mm-hmm. but yeah, that's super heavy. I have a 13-year-old. I only have one, but I can't imagine having to deal with something like that. So
So that's why I tell people, like, yeah, it's great to have money. It's, you know, like Bitcoin is awesome, but you know what? Don't forget about your family. Like, spend time with your family. Tell them you love them, because life is short and we're all gonna die, you know? Make your life here on earth the best that you can. Be kind to others, you know? So that's what I like to tweet about. I like to tweet about positivity, and, you know, I know a lot of people think it's corny, but I'm like, I don't care. You know, this is my Twitter handle, my profile, and I'm going to do whatever the heck I want.
Yeah.
And that's what I tweet about.
It's true.
Positivity, kindness.
Like, as much as we want to say Bitcoin is the most scarce thing, time is actually more scarce, because you get moments and then you get it and then it passes. And so
exactly.
You know, like, and
time and your health, you know, nothing. Yeah. Bitcoin can't buy that for you.
No, yeah, exactly. Like, think about a guy like Warren Buffett. Like, if you were to ask him, you know, would he give up all his billions of dollars to turn the time back and be 20? It's like, of course. Like, why would you not? Like, why would you not rather be 20 years old, no wealth, than be 96 years old with all the wealth in the world? You know, you can't do anything with it. So this, the time that you have is the most important thing that you have here.
Yeah. So spend time with your family members. Tell them you love them. Do things with them. Go on vacations. Like, just like have those memories, you know, because like my, you know, Alan, my son, died when he was 8, you know, he had turned 8, and I only had 8 short years with him, you know? So, you know, I have a lot of like, you know, like the stuff they make in school, you know, they bring home. I'm so glad I kept all that stuff. Like, I have all that stuff. I have letters of him that he made in school, you know, for Mother's Day. Like, I love you. Yeah, I have one that says, I love you like Junior. Junior's his dog. I love you like Junior. Almost like, just almost like Junior. I'm like, wow, I'm so glad you love me like Junior, you know? You are the best mom in the world. I literally have that on my, in my fridge. Like it's on my fridge, and I see that every day. It's cool. So no, he made in school for me, and he says, you know, you're the best mom in the world. You know, I'm so glad I kept all that stuff.
It's funny. There's a couple of things you said, right? Like, first of all, you mentioned like, okay, you know, like I had a job. It was a decent job, you know, but at the same time, it's not making like a lot of money, you know, so you have all these dreams in life, right? I mean, I think a lot of people are in a situation like that where maybe they're making, everybody who's been in a job always feels like they're not making enough, first of all, right? Because there's always like too much money left over at the end of your money. That's what I used to like to say. You know, it's like your money finishes before like the month is over.
Yeah.
And you got these dreams about travel, or maybe, you know, like you want to buy this house or something, and you have no idea. And you're kind of just like the job you're working in is just like consuming so much time and energy from you, you know, like just like at the end of the week, whether it's Friday or Saturday or whatever, you're just like beat, you know, you just want to like kick your feet up and chill out and get ready for Monday again, because it's going to be another long week. So you don't really have like the mental space either to get out of this stuff. And I think for me as well, it was just like, wow, like discovering Bitcoin, it kind of just like gives you hope again, you know, and it gives you, if you really get that conviction. And again, you know, I at the same time, I also feel like a little bit cautious, you know, because nothing in life is guaranteed, obviously. You know, and I'm always so really cautious about, like, I don't want to end up like me and Sean being like these guys that spread hopium and, you know, like then in like 5 years, you know, for whatever reason, Bitcoin is like back at 10K or whatever. And people are like there with like their hopes and dreams in their lap. You know, the good thing about having this conviction anyway is that it changes your mindset, right? Because now you feel like you're saving in something that's going to appreciate over time. It's not like you're putting your money in a bank account where you know it's just going to be worthless in 10 years or going to be worth less, you know, literally worth less over time. So you feel like you just always have to raise and you always have to like keep improving at your job and make. But if you kind of feel like, hey, what I'm doing is good enough and the money I'm putting aside is going to be worth something or even worth more in the future, then it kind of like lets you slow down a little bit and be like, wait a second, you know, I can stop running for a while and I can breathe and I'm going to think about how I'm going to spend this money in the future and how I'm going to want to spend it. So you kind of feel like you have a little bit more room to breathe and think and maybe go to the gym or maybe make plans for the future. And the fun thing is you actually start thinking again about how you're going to spend that time. Well, before, all you're thinking about, no, I just have to get this job first, you know, and I just have to focus here, focus. And that's all you're doing. And you're kind of like stuck. And for me, it really just changed my whole outlook. And like, I left Holland, I left my job. And, you know, the funny thing is I could have done it already. You know, it had nothing to do with Bitcoin going up. It's just that different mindset and this positive outlook, like you're saying as well, Midi, it just, I don't know, it just gives back to you, changes your mindset. And it maybe seems hard to believe for people, but
it's when people say Bitcoin is hope, because when I asked my ex for divorce, you know, we were trying to sell our house in December. Like, so I asked for divorce in September 2016, and in December, we were trying to sell the house because we had to split, you know, we had to just split up and just sell the house, you know, to go about our own way, our separate ways. So pretty much we were trying to sell our house. And then like 2 months after, our son gets sick. And then we pretty much had to stop the sale of the house, you know, cancel the sale and then focus on him. And one thing that happened was I found this experimental treatment in Mexico, in Monterrey, Mexico, that I was told, you know, doctors said there's nothing we can do. The only thing we can do is radiation. And but I found these doctors that were doing some experimental treatment in Mexico, and I was like, I told my ex, I said, we're there. And we took our son like for 5 treatments. It was very expensive. We wound up selling the house. the house wasn't selling when we first decided to sell it, when we were splitting up. But after he got sick and we decided to sell the house after he got sick, it actually sold the day after. Like it was in the market for one day. And then we used that money to pay for the treatments, which were like, I'm going to say the treatment, just the treatment was like almost $8,000 a month. And then we had to, and then my ex's sister, would help us with the flights. And then people in Facebook, I had to get a Facebook account. It's called Alan Strong. And you can see the whole journey there if anybody wants to take a look. But I pretty much had to ask for money so we could go every month and for that treatment. And, you know, I'm not sure if it helped, if it extended his life, but I'm glad it gives me
peace of mind. At that point in time, you want to be able to say that you've done everything you could, right? I mean,
yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. So I have peace in my heart that we try to save him. Yeah.
It must be tough too, Mighty, because you had three kids at that time, right? So here you are, you know, like you're selling your house. You're literally pouring every last cent you have into trying to keep your youngest son alive. But at the same time, you also must be thinking and wondering, what does the future look like, right? Because we're going to have like zero money, no home. I can't even imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, because the money, you know, we were going to sell the house and I was going to have a little chunk of change to start all over. But then all that went down the drain when our son got sick. Like we had nothing left. So after our son died, and which was November 2017, I actually moved out and got my own place in January 2018. And I had zero money. I only had my job, which
ended up renting.
And I had to go rent. I had to go rent an apartment and just start all over with just my job and my two kids. You know, we have shared custody of the kids, but still, like, rent is really expensive. I'm in Florida, and rent is really expensive. But you know what? I don't know. I was able to save some money, and I was able to buy my own place by myself. And so I'm a homeowner, and you know, there's a lot of people that say, oh no, you shouldn't buy a house. I'm like, well, when you have kids and then you have, I've rented places and I've had the homeowners come and say, oh, we're going to sell the house, you got to move. And I didn't want to do that anymore. So I was like, I need to buy a house.
Yeah.
So that's what I did.
No. Look, I'm never somebody. You know, there are Bitcoiners who says, you know, like real estate is a shit coin, don't do it, blah blah.
It is, but not your own personal home.
The thing is, if you're going to be paying rent anyway, right? You might as well use that rent as a down payment on a mortgage, because then if the housing prices goes up, at least you take advantage of some of that upside, right? I mean that. When you're like renting, that's literally just like money every month that just disappears, that you're never going to see anything from it back. So to me, it always made sense to be able to buy something if your salary allows for it. Hey, just one more thing, Mighty. Like it seems like.
Did you say I'm Mighty? Laughing. Mitty.
I'm sorry, Mitty. I'm sorry. I'm Dutch.
Get a name right, Marcus.
He's doing it on purpose.
No. It's just, you know, that's the funny thing, right? If you're on Twitter, you see all these names, and then you just pronounce it as you would read it in your head. And I didn't know it was Mitty, so I apologize.
But she's mighty and resilient.
I am mighty.
That's what I was getting.
You guys see my tattoo?
You got like all this hardship poured out over you, and yet here you are, like with a big smile and positivity. And then you come on Bitcoin Twitter, and Bitcoin Twitter is not always like the most positive place, right? I mean, there's a lot of like grumpy and toxic characters out there, and I'm guilty of that as well. But like, how do you look at that part of Bitcoin Twitter? How do you explain it? I mean, you're a psychology major. What's going on with like toxic maximalists? What's your take on that?
Well, I think that some people just haven't been through tough times, you know, like life is hard. Life is really hard. And unfortunately for me, it hasn't been easy at all. I haven't mentioned this, but I lost my dad in 2007 to the housing crash. So like suicide prevention is really close and near to my heart because I lost my dad to that. So, and then I lose my son to cancer, to brain tumor. You know, I have to leave a bad relationship of 20 years. I have to start all over, you know, like it just, it hasn't been easy. Like there's been days where I didn't want to get out of bed. I didn't want to do anything, but I've had such great support system. Like I have amazing friends. I have friends that have literally like pulled me out of bed. They're like, no, get out. You're coming out, you're getting out of bed. You're not staying in bed. So having relationships like that, it's very important, you know? And I've, now that I'm on Twitter, I've met wonderful people too. So I'm looking forward to I don't know, just meeting people. I like to meet people, I like to talk, you know?
Yeah, I would say like a lot of the Bitcoin maximalists that are considered toxic, more than anything, like it's just toxicity to the scams that are out there. We've seen so, like, think about what you were talking about at the beginning. For the longest time, we've seen these elitists that try to siphon our money through taxation or through inflation, which is theft. And you see, you know, all these new cryptos that continually pop up because people can't print more Bitcoins, but they can print more altcoin. More altcoins, yeah. And then they try to siphon people's Bitcoin through the altcoin scams, and so it's just kind of it's. I think what we're seeing is, look, we see that there's a lot of, you know, bad people and bad actors in the world, and so we do want to be toxic towards these scammers because we want them to let them know that they're not welcome, in a place where we're trying to bring about honest and good money. So I think sometimes the toxicity can be looked, I would call it more as passion than anything, right? There's a lot of people who are passionate about honest money, and it can be looked at as toxicity because there's so many scammers out there. And but really it just seems like it's good passion for something that is changing the world one person at a time.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But there's some people out there that are just, it's too much, you know, like they could be so mean, you know, like I think for women in the space, like we're so outnumbered, you know, it's hard.
Yeah.
Like you have no idea the DMs I get, like, you know, guys can be brutal, but I'm in the boating industry, you know, I'm in the manufacturing. I deal with guys every day. So Twitter is nothing for me. Like I have to go to work every day and just deal with vultures. So. It's okay. It's okay. Their toxicity, you know, against women.
I think it's good you mention it though, because honestly, I think I have no idea because obviously I don't ever get any DMs like that or whatever. But I have an older sister, and I know she, you know, like even in like high school, it was always like really annoying because
Yeah,
it should be called out. You just learn to ignore them
and stuff. Just ignore. Yeah, I just don't even bother answering the DMs. Hi. I'm like, seriously? Hi?
Are you sure those aren't the bots? No, I'm just joking.
Those are real.
How long have you been in crypto? That's the kind of DMs I get.
Yeah, I don't get actual people like you, like Mitty. I'm sure you get actual people DMing you. I get I get the bots DMing me. Then they say, how's your trade going? That's why.
How's your trading?
That's why I start every episode. How's your trade going?
Yeah, I used to get that when I first got in on Twitter. That's what I used to get. But then after I started posting and being more active, then I actually started getting DM from guys.
Okay, well, before this has been a great conversation. Before we let you go, we have three questions that we want to ask. And these are the three questions. You said that you've listened to a couple episodes. So these are three. We changed the questions specifically for you so you won't be prepared.
Ah, okay.
I'm joking. We didn't change anything. It's the same three questions. Okay, so question number one. What did you read or listen to that made you finally swallow the orange pill?
I'm gonna say I didn't read the whole thing, but I've listened because I like Audible and I prefer to listen to books.
I count that as reading.
The Creature from Jekyll Island.
Oh wow.
I was baffled. I was like, wow, is this how this came about? Like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, for the people who don't know the Creature of Jekyll Island, what did they tell you in there that you were like, wow?
It's pretty much how the Federal Reserve came about. Why it was created and why it's in existence. The Federal Reserve is not a federal entity. It's not a government entity, right? It's not a government entity, and it doesn't hold any reserves.
Mm-hmm.
It's owned by like families. Like it's a private entity, and most people don't know this. I was actually with a good friend of mine that I hadn't seen in years, and I was orange peeling them without noticing. And I, when I told her that about the Federal Reserve, that is not a government entity, she's like, oh, I'm gonna have to look into that. So maybe she's kind of half orange peeled.
it's very weird, right? Because when you read or listen to the Creature from Jekyll Island, and you hear that like all these private bankers, you know, they meet in secret on this Jekyll Island. And you know, they kind of just like create the Federal Reserve, where they set out the outline how they can do it. But then even today, you know, when you search that on Google, you know, you'll find all these articles pushing back on that, saying, well, it actually is federal.
Uh-huh.
So it you know what I mean? So it remains like this weird thing where you're thinking, like, are you going crazy? Are you a conspiracy theorist? It's
If you Google it, it'll say that it's a quasi federal agency, right? Like, right. Whatever that means, you know. And so that's, and I think that's what's pretty amazing, is that there's a lot of branding when it comes to the Federal Reserve. I mean, they can print the money that is the official currency of the United States. And that's what's insane, is that there's one entity that can print the money of the United States. That's the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
And it's basically a private entity, you know? Yeah, it's connected to the government, but it's not the Treasury of the United States. And that's what's insane, is that they have the power. And the whole thing about it is, if you have the power to print money, maybe you won't be corrupted by it, but the person that comes after you definitely will be corrupted by it, because it's too much power for one entity to hold, to be able to print the money that the whole nation or the whole world uses. It's insane amount of power.
You know what, Rob, you know what really bothers me? That after I've gone into Bitcoin and just learned a lot about it, like, it makes me mad that I have to go to work for 8 hours.
Yes.
And then someone can just
print.
You know, I have to earn. Like, I have to spend my most valuable asset, which is my time, going somewhere to earn this fiat, this, you know, this money that someone could just print. Like, it makes me mad. Why I'm buying as much Bitcoin as I possibly can.
It's a slap in the face, right? Like, it's literally a slap in the face. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, peasants, you go work for the money, which we should work for our money, right? That's what we should do. But the slap in the face is then now I'm going to print, 4 trillion with the press of a button. And
yeah,
you have to work for the crumbs that we get every single day. Is we have to work for it, while the Federal Reserve can print, orders of magnitude more than we can ever work for. And it's theft. It's straight up theft. There's no other way around it. It's counterfeiting money. If any one of us did that, it would be called counterfeiting. The Federal Reserve does it, and it's good monetary policy. It's amazing how the branding of these things has come about. But yeah, it's a slap in the face to hardworking people everywhere who actually work for their money.
That's why I don't keep money in the bank, because it's being devalued. If I kept my money like fiat in the bank, it's just being devalued. The more they print, the less it's worth.
Guaranteed
to lose purchasing power. And what they do is they'll print up $6 or 7 trillion US dollars and then hand out people $1,200 checks in the mail. People are like, great, they're giving us money, but if you count that up, it's not even like 1 trillion or around 1 trillion, and the other 5 trillion that they printed, goes to what and where, and it just inflates the prices of everything. We've seen it in the last 2 years. We've had like more than double digit like inflation over the last couple of years. So everything gets more expensive. Your dollar is now literally, gone down in purchasing power. Your salary doesn't increase as fast as the inflation rate goes up. So you're there having to work harder for less, and you just get screwed and screwed and screwed. You just keep it going. And it's like, we guys got to keep it at around 2%. We all know the inflation rate is higher, but the fact that they keep it around whatever percentage is like, we can't have it go up too high, because then people will get really mad, right? And they're going to revolt and they're going to come after us with pitchforks. But, we're going to steal just enough, so we can bleed them, without killing them. That's what it seems like. But
it's sad. It's sad because that people don't realize that that's what they're doing,
That's the thing. Until Bitcoin, you're just thinking like, you just don't think too much about money, right? You figure like that the government is just doing a fair, the government is never doing a great job because it's also people and it's organization. So it's a group of people and it's like big and slow and inefficient. So you kind of know all that, but it's still, run by people who are voted in there. People are generally well-intentioned. That's kind of like the vision I had of it, and surely they're just not like printing a bunch of it. But then when you actually look into the details, you realize, wait a second, there are these pockets of power that can really abuse that power. And, history always shows that when people have this kind of power, it's just human psychology, right? Like people are greedy and people will always do whatever it's in their own best interest. So
power corrupts. Like people go into politics. Don't you say that people go into politics and they're rich all of a sudden? I'm like, how the heck does that happen?
Yeah. Look at Jacinda Ardern from New Zealand, right? She gets everything done with all those mandates down there, and then boom, she's, oh no, I'm retiring now, right?
Okay.
After she made all her money. And most of these people, whether it's in any country, it's not just New Zealand, any country, a lot of these people, they work in the government and then they end up working at an institution that they were regulating.
Exactly. Okay.
So
I love it though. You're a creature of Jekyll Island. We haven't heard that one yet before.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
we good. Got a lot of Bitcoin standards, safety.
Yeah, it's a really long book, though.
Andreas Antonopoulos.
I've kind of jumped around. It's like a 24-hour listen. It's that big. So,
that's good. A lot of gym time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. Okay. Question number two: how do you see hyper-Bitcoinization playing out?
I don't see it anytime soon. Maybe, I don't know, within the next, 10 years, maybe. I'm just guessing. But but I think it's happening though. It will happen because, and I know the dollar is the last currency to fall, but it will fall. It goes all fiat, you know, just falls. It's just not, if you can print it, then yeah. But I see that maybe 10 years or so.
Okay.
I hope.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
What do you think, Marcus?
What do I think? I'm always like, I was triggered a little bit by that saying, like the dollar is going to be the last one to fall. Everybody seems to agree on that. I don't necessarily agree. You know, like the dollar is the world reserve currency, right? And right now, the whole debt to GDP is just going insane. And with the higher interest rates, you're going to have to like issue even more debt. And everybody's really focused on the dollar. And there's also, I don't know, I'm no big macro expert guy, but you know, since it's the world currency, like if the trust in, you know, the system really collapses, maybe the dollar is going to be the first one to go, right? And maybe like the Swiss whatever will not go as fast or whatever. So I'm not so sure that a dollar is going to be the last one to go, because if it goes, once trust is lost in the system, then you know, what happens? Are we going to go back to a gold standard, Bitcoin standard, or whatever? But you know, like maybe the dollar will be the focus or what everybody gets scared about, right? Because once that cracks, everybody else hinges on it. And you can be like, well, then all these other currencies are going to go first. I don't know. I don't know how that plays out. And another thing we talk about a lot is like, will hyper Bitcoinization happen like slowly, then suddenly? You know, is it like slowly adoption of Bitcoin and people talking about it, and that this idea, this knowledge about, you know, how money really works, it's growing, right? You see TikTokers, you see people on YouTube starting making videos. So it's like this awakening of people to what money is and what's happening. And you can say that if like a critical part of society acknowledges this, and all of a sudden like the media, you know, the people who work in media start talking about this as well and start daring to ask critical questions, then you can have like this snap moment where suddenly happens and people lose the trust and people run into other things and run away from fiat, that you got kind of like a bank run scenario where people just don't, you know, like just like you say, I don't keep your money in fiat. Sean and I, we keep as little money in fiat as well. So we already started a bank run. You know, if the rest of the world does this as well, then you're going to see a sudden collapse of fiat currency. So that's one way. Another theory is that we're going to be living in this situation where we're going to have like multiple currencies, both fiat, maybe even some cryptos, gold. People will maybe prefer to hold real estate, you know, that people are just more aware and cautious about where they store their value, but that there might always be different places to store it. You know, maybe not that maximalist version of like Bitcoin is the only thing and everybody's gonna love Bitcoin. I mean, you know, some people might still prefer to hold gold, right? Or might prefer to hold jewelry, so that might be a more slower adoption and maybe a smaller role for Bitcoin. It's not something we talk about, but I can see that happening. So.
Well, I read what's this guy, the Robert Kiyosaki's book,
Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Yeah, Rich Dad Poor Dad. Like, I love that book, and I read it a long time ago, and I just said to myself, it's like a no-brainer. Like, buy assets. Buy things that make you money, you know, get things that make you money. So that's why real estate is so appealing.
What's interesting is Robert Kiyosaki came out about 6 months ago or so, or 3 to 6 months ago, and said, don't buy real estate anymore.
Yeah.
The guy, guy who is the real estate guy, he came out and said, don't buy real estate anymore. Like, that's,
but what is he buying?
He always finishes his tweets with like gold, silver, Bitcoin, right? That's what he's buying.
Okay.
I don't know what else he's buying. I mean, you never, like, they always say, like, watch, don't listen to what they say, watch what they do. So who really knows? I mean, he still has a ton of real estate. I think his whole idea was that the interest rates are so high, that for some reason or another did not buy real estate. I don't know. He didn't really, I don't think he really got into it. He just said that to not buy real estate right now.
Well, I think he's not buying real estate because the prices of homes are ridiculous these days.
Yeah, and maybe that's part of it. Maybe
that's why.
I think they will go up in time on a long enough time frame, but yeah. I think there's a big risk of like on the shorter medium term of some kind of housing correction or whatever.
I mean both so prices of real estate, everything's like expensive, like real estate prices are like it's high, and so is interest rate. So this is not a good time to buy, yeah. Unless you find something like a good deal and maybe you can refinance later when the interest rates are lower, then that would make sense.
It's all connected, right? So you see like the stock market was in a huge bubble. So that's correcting down. So people are becoming less wealthy. So there's going to be like, that has pressure on people wanting to sell more homes. There's going to be less capital around to buy more homes. So that's downward pressure, higher interest rates, you know, the cost of capital to the cost of borrowing money goes up. So it's harder to buy that bigger dream house you want if you're borrowing. Yeah. So that's also less demand. So it seems like a consensus as well. I think you're already seeing that like the number of households are going down already. So like the first signs are there already. And the prices have yet to follow. But yeah. I think pretty clearly. One more thing I wanted to add though, right? Like on that second version I was saying where there's like people just choosing to store their wealth in different things than Bitcoin. You just gotta always like remember that. You know, like Bitcoin is the only thing that has that absolute scarcity, right? You cannot inflate it, you cannot make more of it. And like even gold, you know, like which is really scarce. You know, gold is very hard to increase, but when the price of that thing goes up, then production will go up because underwater gold and stuff is gonna be affordable to mine. But like the Bitcoin protocol with the difficulty adjustment, you cannot mine more of it. So anything else is going to inflate harder. So on a long enough time frame, Bitcoin is going to have like the scarcest thing. So whatever, you know, with more and more stuff, Bitcoin becomes scarcer and scarcer. So in relative terms, you always need more gold for the same amount of Bitcoin or more.
Marcus, do you have ESP? Because you were like, I was literally going to address your second point. And
I can see you licking your lips when I make my argument. I'm like, wait a minute. Sean is like rubbing his hands, like I'm gonna take Marcus down. Like, let me preemptively take the ammunition away from you.
All I was gonna say was, think about like Marcus. Think about when you and me got into Bitcoin, which was not that long ago, and the block reward was 12.5 Bitcoin. And now in 2024, the block reward's going to be 3.125 Bitcoin. Like that's the scarcity. Like that's how fast this thing continues to get more and more scarce. I don't think people realize how fast this goes down. Like the scarcity is insane in Bitcoin. And so that's that. Like we've never lived in a 3.125 Bitcoin world. And we have no idea what that type of scarcity looks like. And I think that's like, it's just amazing how fast all this Bitcoin's getting mined and then how scarce it gets, boom. And then it's like, there's really not a ton out there for people to buy. And if the people that hold it, they know that there's not like, that they know how scarce it is, then they're not selling it for any cheap price. And that's like, you could see Bitcoin's price run up an insane amount in this next cycle, like insane amounts, like 2013 type of style. And I think that's what people don't realize is that there's still a ton of room for Bitcoin to run up. And I think a lot of people are sleeping on what happened because the 2021's bull run wasn't as big, but there was a lot of reasons why. Maybe there's new reasons that come about that suppress Bitcoin's price in 2024 and 2025, who knows? But I think that with the inflation of the dollar, the fact that interest rates have to get lower, the fact that we have, like the United States will have to keep printing more dollars, it'll be interesting. I did like your point though, Marcus, that we kind of take for granted that we always say Bitcoin will, or the dollar will be the last one to go through hyperinflation. And, you know, we say that because there's so much dollar demand in other countries around the world, but who knows, maybe that's not true. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Last question. So Bitcoin, we're talking about Bitcoin, like it's like, there's going to be this hyper Bitcoinized world. We say Bitcoin's hope, all these things, but what if it's not, right? What if we're wrong? What do you see as Bitcoin's biggest threat?
Bitcoin's biggest threat. I don't see any threat. Like Bitcoin, to me, Bitcoin is perfect. It's just, and you know what? If we go down to zero, I don't care. I really don't care, because I love the why Bitcoin was created, why it's like a revolt against the monetary system. Like I said, if it goes to zero, then it goes to zero. But I have full conviction. So what do you guys think?
No threats at all to Bitcoin. All right.
I completely agree. That's the people who are selling the floor. It's like, you're never taking my Bitcoin, right? Like, yeah, you can ban it, but you're still not getting my private key, and Bitcoin is always going to be there. So you might scare like a lot of normie people who still believe in the system or whatever to like not buy it anymore, or scare them out of touching it, be with threatening to jail or whatever, but you're never getting my private keys. You know,
like, you know, I think I lost mine on that boat ride.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you prove that someone has a private key or not? How do you prove that I haven't lost my private key since 5 minutes ago, even, you know?
Like, yeah.
That's the thing. What if I can't keep my private key in my mind, but oh, now I've forgotten it?
Yeah, and not, you can never know how much and if people actually still have it, right? So
yeah,
I can be like, okay, here's a 0.00001 Bitcoin. That's all I had. You know, like, good luck.
Yeah, I sold the rest.
So it's like the technology behind it of, you know, like the inconfiscatability of it all. Yeah, and the mindset of the people and the reason why they hold it. I think the idea and what it stands for is so much bigger than the monetary value. Of course, it's not unimportant, and Satoshi really understood that, and he wrote about that a lot. And I think that's why he introduced, you know, like the whole distribution system with the halving and a difficulty adjustment, you know, instead of just like issuing a bunch of coins. Of course, there was also thought about how do you distribute it fairly in a fair way. I mean, it has so much components to it, and it's just a fair system. You know, it was, he also had to mine it. He didn't pre-mine it or anything. So yeah, it just stands for taking that power and that corruption away from the powers that be. And that's the original idea. That's what it stands for. That's what it was built for. That's what it's being hardened by, because it's being attacked, you know, it's constantly being attacked, and it just makes it stronger. And yeah, I think that's why people will never, you know, there's a growing group of people who will never give up their Bitcoin for that reason. So for that reason alone, it would never be able to go to zero, first of all. And So yeah, Sean, whether we reach hyper Bitcoinization or not, maybe not. That's what Jeje said too, you know, maybe it'll only be like that hardcore
sovereign
or 13%, right? The 13% group
I disagree.
They consider themselves Bitcoin maximalists.
You know,
maybe.
Look, Bitcoin's, I think that everyone's gonna be storing their keys one way or another in the future. I don't know how it's gonna be done, but I think that there's gonna be a way that we all have our own keys. We all become our own banks. But it'll take time. That might take a lot longer than maybe even our lives before that really does happen. But I think it's important and it's imperative to the freedom of individuals. And yeah, most individuals, they choose, like most people choose convenience over privacy and freedom. That's what we've noticed over the last I mean, a couple of years even, that's been, it's been definitely even elevated into our minds that most people choose the convenience and, you know, the collective over the individual. And I think that's one of the things that Bitcoin brings back, is it's bringing back this, it's a renaissance, bringing back the individual, bringing back why we are important as individuals, and that, you know, it takes personal accountability and responsibility to be free. You can't just be free. There's no, like, it's trade-offs. It's the same thing with, you know, with keeping the block size, so you can have decentralization of the nodes. It's the same, there's trade-offs involved in freedom. And the trade-off is to have freedom, you have to have personal responsibility and accountability. If you don't, then you choose convenience, but then you're also going down a slippery slope of being enslaved monetarily. So these are the roads that we're facing, and we're facing a crossroads right now where it's becoming very apparent that it's really only two ways that this can go. Total surveillance,
so
Bitcoin.
Exactly. So imagine, right, you have two groups of people. You've got people who are, you know, like on their CBDC slave coin, right?
Yeah.
Having to work harder and longer and be unhappier. And then you've got this group on the sidelines, whether it's 13% or a small group, that are like super happy. They increase buying power. Everybody's going to be like, hey, wait a minute, why are these people so happy? What are they doing that I'm not seeing, right? Because
yeah,
that's how it goes as well. We look at celebrities, we look at sports players. Everybody wants to be like that, right? We want to travel. So what people are going to be like, what are you guys doing? You know, like, I want to be like you. And then when they figure out it's Bitcoin, I mean, like, it just seems so simple, right? And it's not like people are not interested in that kind of stuff. Of course they are. So once that plays out, and the more it plays out, the more people will jump on. So it's like this, it's almost hard to argue against how you cannot see this playing out.
It's the I missed it fallacy. And I think that's what people, like, think about how many touch points you get in Bitcoin before you actually start to go down the rabbit hole. And so people, they think, oh, I missed it. Like, think about Mitty, right? If she were to say, oh, I got in at 4,000 and then I got my fiat amount back and it's 20,000. I missed it. I missed the run up. It's over, right? And I think that we have to understand, like, as long as there's block rewards, you have not missed it. Like, this thing is continually getting more and more scarce. It's not fully mined yet. And you're not too late. Not only are you not too late, you're still early to Bitcoin. And you have
very early.
Even
in 50 years, right? If you're, and everybody's holding Bitcoin, there is no more fiat. Just imagine, right? Then Bitcoin is still going to be the most scarcest thing in a world where technology and information and technological improvement keeps going, because that's the human species, right? We keep inventing new stuff throughout time. Yeah. That's just in our biology. We want to progress. We want to move forward. So we're always going to be looking to invent more stuff, make things easier. So with more and more stuff and technology, and you're living in an expansionary world, and something that is scarce that stays the same size will, you know, there will be more stuff per Bitcoin. So even in 50 years, you know, like, your great grandkids, they're going to be born and they should be wanting Bitcoin, because, you know, it's something, first of all, it cannot be cheated, blah, 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 all that stuff, you know, debate, but it's still going to be something that will be the most scarcest thing. So it should accrue value over time. So even in that scenario, obviously there is a benefit to being early to this thing, right? To get it, to adopt it, or when it's still adopting, there's like this extra benefit to it. But even if it's fully adopted, it still makes perfect sense to want to own Bitcoin. That's the thing that a lot of people don't see or get.
Yeah.
And I think time will prove it, right? So with more and more years, people who are saying, I missed it, you know? But then with more and more people understanding it and explaining it, at a certain point, they will just be like, okay, yeah, I missed it, I was stupid, or they just buy.
A lot of people don't understand that there's, you know, they can buy a little bit of Bitcoin, you know? They don't understand there's Satoshis, they can buy $20 worth of Bitcoin, you know? A lot of people don't understand that. They some people think that they have to buy one whole coin. So
yeah,
that's
a lot of people
are scared off by the volatility right now.
People even think, even though they know that you can buy less than one Bitcoin, you can buy Satoshis, they still think, well, it's not worth it unless I get one coin, right? But it's savings. It's like, that'd be like saying, look, it's not worth saving money until I can save $1 million. Why would I save anything unless I could save $1 million? It's like, no, that's not the point of it.
Yeah.
You just keep saving little by little, whatever you're making, and you save it in Bitcoin. I think it's like, you don't have to start, like the whole point of saving isn't to start out saving one whole Bitcoin. It's to save little by little and up the amount of sats that you have until you get to wherever you get to, you know, and then you use your savings as you would use your savings in your normal life.
So yes. That's when I get a raise at work. I live the same way and I just stack more sats. Yeah. That's the way I roll.
Smart. That's a smart way. Okay. Well, thank you. Thanks, Mitty, for coming on today to Bitcoiner's Guide. Give people a handoff if where they can find you, if there's anything you're working on that you're keeping under wraps, you're not telling us about, let people know, or just where they can find you.
I'm just on Twitter pretty much. My handle's Mitty Reyes. That's it. And I just like to post about fitness. I'm into the health and wellness. It's just been a passion of mine since I was 17. So I've been working out since I was 17 on and off. And I pushed that a lot. That's a lot of my tweets are about health and wellness because, you know, if you don't have your health, then you have nothing. It doesn't matter how much Bitcoin you own, how much money you own. But if you're sick and you have all the money in the world, what is that? It's not good.
That's true.
So, I'm just on Twitter. You know, I had started this little side hustle when I got furloughed from work in 2020, but then they called me back and then I just didn't really do anything about it. I used to be a fitness trainer, but I let that one expire too. I mean, I know what to do, but I'm just on Twitter, you know, on Spaces, just posting about, like I said, health and wellness, Bitcoin, positivity, you know, be kind to others. That's what I like to do.
Awesome. Any final words, Marcus?
Yeah, no. Thanks for coming on and sharing that story. I love the positivity. I think we can use a lot more of that on Bitcoin Twitter as well. So happy to see it. Love to meet new people like this. So look forward to hanging out.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was great.
Yeah, thanks again. And as a reminder for everyone else listening in, what you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, don't just let it stay here. Please share, like, subscribe. If you found this information helpful or entertaining, please help us out and leave a review or comment in. And remember, we have the Meme Factory podcast that goes every Thursday, 7:30 p.m. live. Don't forget to buy Bitcoin, stack at Coinbits. And take everything off the exchanges. We got the Halving Party 2024 coming up, so don't miss that either. That'll be in El Salvador. Go to bitcoinhalvingparty.com. As for Bitcoiner's Guide, Mitty, thank you so much for coming on today for Bitcoiner's Guide episode 45. No, this is 46. Episode 46 from Mitty, Play Marcus, and Big Sean. We are over and out. Peace.